Paul's letters to the Thessalonians tell of the future rapture of the body of Christ, and they challenge Christians to be faithful while still here on earth. Bob Enyart's audio Bible study of 1 and 2 Thessalonians helps to make Paul's message more understandable. 1 and 2 Thessalonians is available by calling 1-800-8-ENYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com.
There's truth up ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
And greetings to the brightest audience in the world. I am Greg Jackson, sitting in for my friend Bob Enyart. And very honored and pleased to be here in the studio. Big shoes to fill, but we have a very, very, very important show that we're going to be broadcasting for you today, folks. The 2012 campaign season is heating up. There have been numerous candidates already on the GOP side that have announced their candidacy. Newt Gingrich, Tim Pawlenty, Herman Cain. Maybe even Michelle Bachmann, not quite sure, but there's others who have formed exploratory committees. So things are definitely heating up. And to discuss the mess that we got ourselves into in 2008, when essentially the GOP nominated, for all practical intents and purposes, a liberal Democrat by the name of John McCain, and to discuss how we don't repeat that mistake in 2012, is a man who for 30 years has been a veteran of not only GOP politics, but also of the Christian pro-family movement in America, a man who I have a great amount of respect for, who has been somewhat of an iconoclast, unafraid to not follow the patterns of just unifying much of the pro-family movement and the Republican Party and many people in the conservative movement. If ever there's a disagreement, there's always a call to unity, and we can't have any disagreements. Well, this gentleman was a five-year member of the very conservative Arlington Group, which is a coalition of national and state-level leaders, family values, advocacy organizations. He's twice addressed the CNP, which is the Council of National Policy, which is an organization of very prominent conservative activists and donors. He is a native North Carolinian. He's an Eagle Scout at age 13, so obviously an underachiever. He is interned for the late Jesse Helms. He served as a congressional lobbyist in Washington, D.C. for National Right to Work Committee. He's been elected to two terms as a GOP county commissioner. He ran for Congress in 1992 in the state of Idaho, and was endorsed at the time by a who's who of conservative Christian leaders like Dick Armey and Jesse Helms, organizations like the NRA, Pat Robertson, Charlton Heston, Phyllis Schlafly. For 8 years, he has been a member of the Army Reserve, so there's not really much that our guest Gary Glenn hasn't done. He's currently, for the past 12 years, been the president of one of the largest pro-family organizations in the United States, the American Family Association, AFA. He's been the president in the state of Michigan, where I grew up, and he's got five children. And now get this, Heston, Harrison, Hunter, Reagan, and Jefferson. I kid you not. Those are his children. Gary Glenn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. I didn't know you were from Michigan.
Well, I'm originally from Evanston, Illinois. I grew up in Michigan, in Birmingham, Bloomfield Hills area. That's why I'm a
Mitt Romney country.
Well, you know Mitt Romney and I are pretty tight, Gary. I know you're pretty tight with Mitt, and we'll be talking about him. But, yeah, that's where I grew up. I get back there once a year. I'm going back this year for the Michigan-Notre Dame game, which will, by the way, be the first night game ever in Michigan Stadium.
Wow.
Yeah, they got lights and 120.
Give me some tickets to that one.
Now, you a Michigan fan?
I moved to Michigan from Idaho, so I'm one of those guys on the blue fans, you know, the Boise State Broncos. So.
Yeah, the weird field, but they seem to win on it every time.
Right.
So, Gary, I gave a kind of a general overview, bullet points, and by the way, your resume is much more extensive, but I picked out what I thought to be some of the more important points just to show our audience that you are a longtime member of the pro-family movement. You have experience in GOP politics. You've been in the inside of a lot of these conservative pro-life organizations. And the reason that I wanted to talk to you is because, as I said early on in the program, in 2008, I think we made a terrible mistake. And in a lot of ways, we compromised in a lot of ways. And I want you to talk about some of those ways, just from a perspective, from the point of view of the pro-family movement. As an organization working for AFA, I want to get your perspective on kind of why did we end up with a guy like John McCain as the GOP nominee, who clearly does not support a lot of or most of the family values that AFA and other leading pro-family and pro-life organizations purportedly believe in. How did we end up with a guy like McCain, Gary?
John McCain, one of six Republican U.S. senators who voted against a marriage protection amendment to the United States Constitution, for example. Very disappointing choice. No wonder we lost as badly as we did. And I guess, in a word, distressing as it is to say, the answer to your question is incompetence. I thought it might be instructive just to make clear, Greg, that this is not a perspective that rests solely with you or with me. Give me a second here. I want to cite some other folks. World Magazine, a Christian publication out of Asheville, North Carolina, it has an article in which Michael Ferris of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and Paul Weyrich of the Free Congress Foundation, they agreed that many conservative leaders had blown it. Charisma Magazine, another Christian publication out of Florida, evangelical leaders overlooked candidates' liberal positions, and by doing so, they ironically set back Christian causes instead of advancing them, says Dick Bott, senior president of Bott Radio Network. In the end, most conservative Christian leaders let down Christian voters. Another article from World Magazine. The frustration I sensed was aimed at the leadership of the so-called religious right. Why, I had heard people ask again and again, had the leaders not led? I have grave doubts whether these same leaders will anytime soon be able to offer credible credentials for positive endorsements of almost any kind. That's from a Christian publication, from World Net Daily. Headline, Janet Folger, who you and I know is a pro-life activist for the last two or three decades. Janet Folger laments void of trustworthy leadership in pro-family movement. And then to add salt to the wound, I mean, those were the wounds of our friends from Christian publications, but to add salt to those wounds, this from Time magazine. What has happened in the months since the nomination process of 2008 has exposed many of those same leaders once and for all as emperors with no clothes, exposing just how little clout, judgment, or principle they have. They exposed a much less lofty agenda. They just liked their seat at the table. They didn't want to lose. They didn't seem to realize that by signing on with a front runner, they were following, not leading, demonstrating weakness, not strength. What this plot twist has really exposed is that the shepherds have no sheep. You get the sense that rank-and-file evangelicals are just as sick of their own quote-unquote leaders as they are of the political arena in general, unquote. And as you indicated, I was in these meetings over the course of two or three years leading up to the 2008 presidential nomination process. It certainly was an eye-opening experience, sometimes like an Alice in Wonderland experience, hearing and seeing things that I simply couldn't believe. Took me a while to even believe I was actually seeing it. Took me even longer to think that it could truly be what I thought I was seeing. I mean, it was really a logical disconnect. And had the presidential nomination process not ended when it did at that certain point in the calendar, I think things were to a boiling point among Christian pro-family activists that a lot of the discussion we may have today would have been broadcast back then. I mean, it was to the point where it was no longer going to be kept off the record. People were going to start talking. And I know that a lot of us came out of that process absolutely intent on not allowing it to happen again. We were shocked and caught off guard the first time by what we witnessed, but we're no longer naive, no longer shockable, I suppose you could say. We left that experience with the intent that this time around, we were not going to stand by and allow that same type of incompetence to happen again.
Well, Gary, we have a very large, one of the largest Christian audiences here in the Rocky Mountains on Bob Enyart Show. I think a lot of our listeners would want to know, kind of get an insider's perspective, exactly what you're talking about, because I think they would be blown away, but I think they deserve to know the truth. This Arlington group that you're talking about is, like I said, one of the largest groups of pro-family and pro-life conservative and Christian leaders in the country, where they get around and they talk about the different candidates and different legislation, so on and so forth.
And there were usually about 80 people in the room.
Usually about 80 of the most prominent leaders in the country. So explain to our audience a little bit about this meeting that you were present at, that you just referred to, that left you incredulous.
Well, as I went back and reviewed some emails that went around at the time, it actually was more than one meeting. But the Arlington group broke down into two camps fairly early in the 2008 presidential nomination process. One camp were those who said, as pro-family leaders to whom tens of millions of Christian Americans look to for leadership, they put some trust in us to varying degrees. I'm president of a state pro-family organization, so I'm one of the lesser lights. But there were certainly people in the room in these meetings to whom millions of Americans look to for leadership. And it broke down into two camps. Those who said, we should find the most godly candidate we can. None of them are perfect. All human beings. We're all sinners, saved by grace. But we ought to find the candidate whose positions on the issues, whose public policy record is closest to the values that we tell all those millions of Americans are paramount from our standpoint in our worldview, the ones we're willing to fight, the hill on which we're willing to die.
Mm-hmm.
Find the candidate consistent on those issues whose positions is also consistent with his actual track record. In other words, not just the candidates who say that they're champions of family values while they have a history of, in elective office, of promoting abortion on demand and the homosexual agenda. That would be Mitt Romney. But find somebody who's faithful to the issues we say are paramount to us, and no matter where they stand in the process, let's gather together and make them viable.
In other words, let's lead.
Let's lead on the basis of that which we tell our constituency they can trust us to lead on. The other half broke into a camp that said, let's look around and see who we think is viable, even if their record or stand on the issues is suspect on those issues that we tell our constituents that are paramount to us, that we're willing to fight and die for. And let's pick that person and get on the bandwagon of whoever we think is going to win. In other words, just like any other special interest group in Washington, put your finger up in the air, wet your finger, put it up in the air, see which way the wind's blowing.
Like a horse race.
Yeah, let's go that way. And this division, it really went about, you know, 50-50. And as it turned out, the ones who were saying, let's find the candidate who we thought most matched our principles, fell into largely a camp of people who came to the point, certainly didn't start out there, but eventually ended up supporting former Governor Mike Huckabee. And the other groups had their finger in the wind. Not surprisingly, they went from Fred Thompson to possibly Mitt Romney and eventually even to John McCain. This part of the process was distressing to me because I certainly fell into that camp that said, we're supposed to be different. We say that these values, biblical, traditional family values,
mm-hmm.
are the ones we're all about. We ought to be supporting a candidate who's consistent with those values. You got to give Mike Huckabee credit. He's not perfect either. But not only was he consistent with those values, but what an endearing way he could communicate them in those debates and things. It made people want to cheer that we should not be falsely leading those who look to us and trust us for leadership about the record or positions of candidates who have a clear track record, a clear pattern of opposing everything we say we're about, such as Mitt Romney. But what really got bizarre, Greg, and this happened on, unofficially a couple of times, and finally, in the one Arlington group meeting that took place immediately after the Values Voter Summit, I think it was September of 2007, at which, after all of this wrangling and debating, the expectation of most people in the room was, we're actually going to come to a conclusion and move in the direction, as many of us as are willing, to supporting a particular candidate. everybody in the room, regardless of which candidate they supported, anticipated that if that vote ever took place, that Mike Huckabee would be the recipient of the support. Gary Bauer held the microphone, was running the meeting, and from our perspective, did everything possible to make sure no such vote occurred, because everybody assumed they knew what the outcome was going to be. But the most bizarre thing about that meeting, officially stated, and unofficially in a few prior meetings, was that here in this group of pro-family activists committed to the traditional biblical definition of the family, one man and one woman, committed to protecting innocent prenatal life in the womb, that in that meeting of all the supposed leaders of the pro-family movement in America, we were told that we would not be allowed, when discussing which candidates should or should not be supported, to discuss their records, to discuss where they stood on these issues. I mean, this was simply mind-boggling. If there was any organization or meeting of any group in America where a candidate stood on issues like abortion and the homosexual agenda should have been discussed, should have been the only basis on which candidates were being judged, we were actually being told that we could not discuss those issues.
By whom?
Well, Gary Bauer was running the meeting. That was the rule that he laid down. Janet Folger, now Janet Porter, objected. There was about a 45-minute debate over whether or not that rule ought to be honored. I didn't participate in the debate. Janet was kind of upset with me afterwards. I didn't speak out because I had no intention of honoring the rule, even if they'd approved it.
That's right.
I mean, we were in a meeting where it was certainly my intent, and I did so after the debate. I think the rule was instituted despite Janet's objection, and I paid no attention to it anyway. And I did discuss Mitt Romney's long record of promoting indignantly, declaring himself not to be a pro-life candidate when he was running for governor, his opposition to a marriage protection amendment to the state constitution in Massachusetts before his state constitution.
His illegal institution of same-sex marriage, the $50
exactly.
copay abortions, on and on.
All of that. I went on, I recounted it in great detail. There probably were few politicians in America who more aggressively promoted the notion of abortion on demand and the homosexual agenda than did Mitt Romney.
No doubt.
And to this day, I mean, Romney flip-flopped on, we've lost track of how many issues, but to this day, the last stated position of Mitt Romney is that he believes that states should pass so-called gay rights laws
and,
that threaten religious freedom. I mean, even the Washington Post and NPR acknowledge that it's the single greatest threat to religious freedom in America today, this whole notion of granting people rights in the law on the basis of sexual orientation and then penalizing and punishing churches and other institutions that don't endorse the homosexual agenda. Romney said he favors that at the state level. To this day, his last recorded statement is that he opposes the Boy Scouts of America position, prohibiting universally in all 50 states and all the scout councils. He's opposed to the policy prohibiting openly homosexual scoutmasters. The fact that after his so-called conversion on the right to life issue, after that, he signed into law RomneyCare, which is the model for Obamacare. It had the individual mandate in it. It had a $50 copay for abortion on demand, which means the bulk of the cost of an abortion, whatever it may be, if the person getting the abortion only has to pay $50, that means the bulk of the cost is paid for by the taxpayers of Massachusetts. And RomneyCare had in it one thing that, to my knowledge, Obamacare even didn't have in it, and that was a designated seat on the governing board of that health care plan for the biggest abortion provider in America, Planned Parenthood. All of these things are his current positions, not all of the things that he used to be, like endorsing gays in the military and endorsing the homosexual agenda. He now claims that he's pro-life, even though in the debate in 2002 as a gubernatorial candidate, he indignantly said, "I do not take the position of a pro-life candidate," direct quote, and asks us to believe that at age 58, after having run for the United States Senate and governor, that he suddenly saw the light, discovered his core values, and now he's a great champion of family values.
I think he's got six or seven kids, so I think he'd seen an ultrasound or two.
Exactly. And I went through that process with the ultrasound, too, and used it as an opportunity to instruct my kids. I'd take each one in when we were seeing the ultrasound of their new coming baby yeah. sister or brother and say, look, that baby is alive. You can see its face.
That's right.
Whatever you end up doing in life, whatever your profession, don't stand silently by as long as it's legal. If we told them to do so, to go in and kill that prenatal child.
Harrison
use
was
the
a
ultrasound
baby.
As a teaching moment.
That's right. Yeah, even my five-year-old knows it. You show him a picture of here in the studio, a seven-week-old from conception. It's a little baby. And I showed it to my son. He said, it's a little baby, Daddy. So it's evident to even 4- and 5-year-old kids.
Let me just follow up on the yeah. point I was making. Is here you had Romney with that kind of record, and yet Tony Perkins appeared on the Focus on the Family Action website in a video in which he said that Romney's positions were, quote, solidly conservative across the board.
Mm.
This is the president of one of the most prominent pro-family organizations in America telling the constituency that depends on us as pro-family leaders and that trusts us for leadership, that trusts us to tell the truth, saying that Romney's positions were, quote, solidly conservative across the board. Romney endorses to this day so-called state gay rights laws, opposes the Boy Scout ban on homosexual scoutmasters, signed into law a $50 copay for abortions, et cetera, not even counting the stuff that he stood wrong on before his great Road to Damascus experience, and yet a major pro-family leader repeatedly telling pro-family voters that he was solidly conservative across the board. Or Dr. Richard Land of the Southern Baptist Convention saying that Romney would make a great presidential or vice presidential candidate despite that record. I mean, there is a reason that Charisma and World Magazine and even Time Magazine said that the pro-family constituency of this country no longer trusts some of the leaders mm-hmm. of that movement to tell them the truth about these candidates. And a lot of us came out of that process in 2008 intent on telling the truth in the 2012 cycle, not only about the candidates, but about any pro-family leader who failed to tell the truth about these candidates. And it's not necessarily an easy thing to do, something we wish we didn't have to do, but the shock has worn off. And I, for one, I know a lot of other sincere pro-family leaders are not going to sit back and watch it happen again in 2012.
We're speaking with Gary Glenn. He's the president of American Family Association Michigan. We only have a few minutes left, Gary, but with regards to Focus on the Family, I want to get to them as well. They're the largest pro-family organization in the country. They're right here in our backyard down south in Colorado Springs. It seems as though James Dobson, too, I mean, he endorsed Huckabee, but only after Romney departed the 2008 race, and he said that Romney was a man who pro-family voters could vote for. Now, I know that Tom Minery and Dobson would or should have been acutely aware of Romney's far left-wing record. Why would Focus on the Family, the largest pro-family organization in the country, have essentially endorsed somebody like Mitt Romney or at least whitewashed his record totally?
Greg, I have grown up to be an admirer over the last 20-some years of Dr. Dobson. I kept wanting to believe that he didn't know about Mitt Romney's record, and yet I've talked to people who say they told him face-to-face that he was aware of it. There's a problem going on in Colorado Springs that goes beyond just the question of Mitt Romney, and I think perhaps you can simply say
it might be a whole other show.
Yeah, I mean, Focus on the Family seems to have been more molded by the culture than they now have any impact or molding on the culture. Mm-hmm. Let me give you another example. It has nothing to do with these presidential elections. The first time President Obama got a chance to nominate a member of the United States Supreme Court, not one but two spokesmen for Focus on the Family said that it should not concern Christians whatsoever if Obama were to nominate an openly homosexual nominee to the United States Supreme Court.
Mm.
That's pretty shocking. Let me read you the exact quote. Our concern at the Supreme Court is judicial philosophy. Sexual orientation only becomes an issue if it affects their judging. Sexual orientation should never come up. It's not even pertinent to the equation. The issue is not their sexual orientation. It's whether they are a good judge or not, unquote, from Bruce Hausknecht of Focus on the Family. There was another woman staffer, a spokesman for Focus on the Family, who said the exact same thing.
Mm.
Someone on the staff at the Family Research Council said, We don't think the process of selecting a Supreme Court justice should include asking questions about a person's personal sex life and explaining, too, that sexual orientation shouldn't be an issue. Pete LaBarbera of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality and I publicly called on Focus to retract that statement, and about a year after they made it, they finally did. So hats off to them for at least backing off this moral surrender.
Maybe after the donations went down, they decided to retract it.
I mean, who knows? But when Focus on the Family
right.
is telling Christians that we should not be concerned whatsoever if President Obama nominates an openly homosexual nominee to the United States Supreme Court, that's got to come as a shock to a lot of people.
Gary, we only got a couple minutes left, 1 minute actually. And give us your take, though. You're experienced 30 years, like I said before. What is the solution to all of this? How does the fight for righteousness, you know, how do we make things right in the future, those who are concerned about these issues?
Well, millions of people look to us for leadership. They trust us because they believe that we will tell them the truth, that we will adhere to the biblical values, the traditional family values that we say that we're all about. And I would say it's as simple as that, that we should, in fact, do what they trust us to do. When any one of us don't, they should no longer look to us for leadership or trust our judgment and our counsel or endorsement or suggestions about any politician. We should be faithful to those principles, to defending prenatal life, to defending marriage between a man and a woman, to opposing that insidious homosexual agenda that attempts to undermine all about how God defines the family. We should tell people the truth about political candidates, and I think now we're committed to telling people the truth when any one of us in a leadership position does not tell the truth about these candidates.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Gary Glenn, president of the Michigan AFA, American Family Association, thank you for being my guest, Gary, and God bless you, and God bless you all.
Hi, this is Bob Benyart. If you'd like to hear more, then you could subscribe to our Bob Benyart Live Bible Studies, our monthly videos, our sermons. For the Bible Studies, you get an entire MP3 CD for $34.95 a month. Or you could get our videos or sermons every month mailed to you for just $24.95 a month. To subscribe, please call 800-8-BENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. That's 800-836-9278. Or you could subscribe online at kgov.com. So check us out on the web at kgov.com for Bob Benyart Live.
Attention, Bob Benyart Live listeners from all over the world. You can now download dozens of Bob's excellent teaching and ministry resources from the KGov store. The plot manuscript and audio series are available, as well as the Bob Benyart Bible Study Series. You can buy these excellent resources at reduced prices while supporting the Bob Benyart Live ministry. And you can have them now. No paying for shipping and no waiting for the postman to bring them. Go to KGovStore.com.